This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
This is Kent Washington, the first American and black basketball player to play professionally behind the Iron Curtain in communist Poland. You are listening to the Total Sports Recall podcast of the Sport History Network. Now, here's your host, Harv Aronson.
Welcome to the Total Sports Recall podcast. I am your host, Harv Aronson, and on this episode, professional boxing will be the topic. As many of my listeners may know, the title of this show includes Sports with a Pittsburgh Twist. As I was born and raised in the great city of Pittsburgh, obviously my favorite sports teams make their home in the Steel City. But aside from the major teams, the Steelers, Pirates, and Penguins, there have been other professional athletes that were born in the Berg. With that said, I turn my attention to the sport of professional boxing as I'll discuss seven great fighters who grew up in towns around Pittsburgh or in nearby counties. When you bring up the topic of pro boxing to anyone that knows Pittsburgh sports history, the first name that will probably always come to mind first is the Pittsburgh kid, Billy Kahn. As he is one of my seven, the other six are Charlie Burley, Sammy Angott, Harry Greb, Teddy Yoros, Fritzy Zivic, and more recently, Paul Spadafora. Instead of covering the entire records of these six men, only fights held in Pittsburgh will be discussed. I'll tell you where these fights were held, whether they were title fights, some dates will be provided, and what each fighter's record was when fighting in front of the hometown crowds. While Forbes Field was home to the Steelers and Pirates, it also became the venue for other events such as boxing. Other arenas and buildings in Pittsburgh that hosted pro boxing in the early decades of the 1900s were Hickey Park in Millvale, the Motor Square Garden, Islam Grotto, the Northside Arena, Duquesne Gardens, Aragon Gardens, and even the Moose Lodge in the city held events. There was also Greenleaf Field, Kearney Auditorium in nearby Erie, Pennsylvania, and back in Pittsburgh, the Academy Theater. East Liberty Hall often held a fight card, as did Exposition Hall. At one time, the National Athletic Club in the city was a host for fights, as the Old City Hall and Orpheum Theater in McKeesport. Also in that town was the Palisades Rink, where Harry Greb once fought. The Power Auditorium was home to bouts, and the skating rink in Charleroi held fights. Not too far from Pittsburgh is the town of Johnstown, where the Southside Casino was a boxing venue. So was Point Stadium. The Southside Market House in Pittsburgh found themselves hosting boxing matches, as did the Tariff Club and Waldemere Hall. In Connellsville, Pennsylvania, the Westside Basketball Hall was a location for fights. Another close-by town to Pittsburgh and home to former Steelers quarterback Terry Hanratty is Butler. There, the Armco Armory held boxing matches, and in Youngstown, Ohio, is also within decent driving distance from the Steel City, and there, bouts were held at Idora Park. Another close town is New Brighton, and at Junction Park, you can see pro boxing. Oil City, about an hour or so outside of the Berg, hosted fights at the Knights of Columbus Auditorium and at the State Armory. Over in North Braddock was the Myers Bowl, having fights, and in Franklin, the Nursery Army was home to some matches. Washington, Pennsylvania is an area outside of Pittsburgh where you could have gone to watch some bouts at the Coliseum. Not just the Moose Lodge in Pittsburgh, but the Moose Temple saw fights there, among others. More recent places were like the A.J. Palumbo Center, Avalon Hotel in nearby Erie, the Chevrolet Amphitheater, Heinz Field, the IC Light Amphitheater, Lawrence Convention Center, Mellon Arena, Monzo's Palace in Monroeville, Rivers Casino, Sheraton Station, and the Peterson Center. Now I'd like to focus on some of the venues and arenas that are no longer around. One such building was the Duquesne Gardens, which is intriguing to me because it was located at 110 North Craig Street. My late grandmother lived on that same street, nearly across the street from where Duquesne Gardens once called home. The facility dates back to the groundbreaking for the site in 1886, and it held events until it was torn down in 1956. Hickey Park in the Millvale section of Pittsburgh held many fights, but the Motor Square Garden on Baum Boulevard in Pittsburgh is historic in several ways. Not only did the Motor Square Garden hold boxing matches, it was once home to the University of Pittsburgh basketball team. The facility was financed by the famous Mellon family and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The garden was built between 1898 and 1900 and was designated to the Historic Register on December 12, 1977. Aside from boxing and basketball, auto shows were held there, as well as dance marathons in the 1930s. Today, this facility is home to the American Automobile Association, or as you may know it, AAA. Other venues in Pittsburgh included Academy Theater, A.J. Palumbo Center, Aragon Gardens. This was the same location as the Moose Lodge, which I will detail ahead. Armco Armory in Butler. This building appears on the list of National Register of Historic Places. Built in 1922, there was a marathon dance contest held there in 1928. In 2010, it was dedicated as the Butler Readiness Center. The Avalon Hotel in Erie, the Butler Streets Sports Arena, Kearney Auditorium in Erie, the Chevrolet Amphitheater, Exposition Hall, another historic facility here. This one was constructed on the shores of the Allegheny River and opened in 1889. It stood until 1941, when the first music hall was demolished, and the Machinery Hall a year later. Then the entire facility was taken down on July 2, 1951, to make room for the development of Point State Park, which today is a much visited site. Greenleaf Field. This is a remarkably interesting baseball stadium as it was located in the Hill District in Pittsburgh. And at the time it was constructed in 1931, it was the only baseball field owned and built by African Americans. The architect was Lewis Arnett Stewart Bellinger. The field was home to the Negro League Pittsburgh Crawfords from 1932 to 1938, as well as the Homestead Grays in that same time frame, with those two teams sporting such major players as Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige, both being a couple of the greatest baseball players in history. Like the Motor Square Garden, Greenleaf Field has been marked as a Pennsylvania historical site, so designated as on July 17, 2009. Heinz Field VIP Tent, the Hilton Garden Inn in Cannonsburg, IC Light Amphitheater, Adora Park, Youngstown, Ohio, and Islam Grotto, Junction Park in New Brighton, the KFC Hall in Oil City, Caphans Arena, Knights of Columbus Auditorium, Oil City, the Lawrence Convention Center, Majestic Theater in Butler, opened in 1905. It closed in 1952. Mellon Arena, Myers Bowl, North Braddock. Now, the Myers Bowl was an open-air facility that opened in 1929. It was located at 6th and Baldridge Streets in North Braddock and specialized in promoting box matches led by matchmaker Jules Beck, with the stadium managed by a trio of Meyer brothers. Monday was the night for fights there. Monzo's Palace Inn in Monroeville. The Moose Lodge. It was located on Penn Avenue in Pittsburgh, stretching from 628 to 634 on Penn Avenue. From 1915 to 1943, it was home to the Moose Lodge No. 46 for Pittsburgh and held boxing matches and other entertainment. It was demolished in 1984. The National Athletic Club, Northside Arena, Nursery Armory in Franklin, Old City Hall, Orpheum Theater McKeesport, the Palisades Rink in McKeesport. This rink still operates today, but it was only a roller rink from 1945 to 1976. Now it's the McKeesport Palisades and is used as an entertainment center for an array of events. Before the roller rink was established, it was a car dealership and in 1920s a dance hall, and also for boxing matches. the Peterson Center, Point Stadium in Johnstown, Power Auditorium, Rivers Casino, Sheraton Station Square, Skating Rink, Charleroi, Southside Casino in Johnstown, Southside Market House, State Armory, Oil City, the Tariff Club, the Coliseum in Washington, Waldemere Hall, and finally the West Side Basketball Hall in Connellsville. Now let's talk about the boxers from Pittsburgh. I'll summarize each of the fighters I mentioned earlier by the earliest boxers up to the most recent, Paul Spadafora. Harry Greb will be the first and was known by his nickname, the Pittsburgh Windmill. Greb was an amazing fighter. He took on all comers in the windmill and was also called the Smoke City Wildcat, obviously because Pittsburgh was a steel-making town. If you include bouts that were not official, his record was an incredible 108 victories and just 8 defeats. There were also 3 draws. But back then there was such a thing as the newspaper decisions, and if you add those in, Greb finished his career with a record of 261, 18, and 19 draws. When it came to fighting in his hometown, Harry Greb fought 103 times, won all but 7, while another 8 resulted in a draw. One fight was a title bout that came on December 3, 1923, when as the NYSAC and NBA middleweight champion, he won a unanimous decision beating Brian Downey at the Motor Square Garden. While that was the only title fight in the Berg, Greb was a world champion, and his last fight in Pittsburgh for his career came on October 25th, 2013, when he defeated Tony Marullo in a 10-round decision. That fight took place at the Motor Square Garden. Greb's very first bout at home came on May 8, 2013 at the East Liberty Hall in Pittsburgh, and he debuted with a victory over Red Cumston, knocking him out. More of a grinder, a fighter who would wear opponents down, Greb only scored 49 knockdowns in his career. The only time any fighter knocked out Harry Greb was in the year of his debut, 2013, when Joe Chip took out Greb in the second round, spoiling the fight in front of a hometown fans at the old City Hall in Pittsburgh. A fight that was scored at TKO went to Kid Graves on December 16, 1915 at the Power Auditorium in Pittsburgh, as Greb had suffered a fractured left arm and could not continue. Tragically, with eye problems, Greb retired from boxing and opened a gym in his hometown. In September of 1926, he underwent eye surgery and his right eye was removed and replaced with a glass eye. Then, while in Atlantic City visiting a clinic to have his nose repaired from damage due to fighting, which resulted in respiratory issues, but complications occurred during the operation and Greb died of a heart attack on October 22, 1916. He was only 32, and for many of the fighters that can be of a prime age, he was laid to rest at Calvary Cemetery in Pittsburgh. Moving ahead in a career that started in 1929, Teddy Yoros, born in Pittsburgh, began his pro boxing career that was highlighted by his winning the World Middleweight Championship in 1934 by beating Vince Dundee at Forbes Field. Yoros is in the Boxing Hall of Fame, and in 63 bouts held in or near Pittsburgh, he won 58 of those. Overall, his career record was 106-18 with 3 draws. The year before defeating Dundee, those same two fighters faced off to Forbes Field with Yoros winning the title fight. The 1933 fight was for the vacant Pennsylvania State middleweight title. Perhaps the greatest fighter out of Pittsburgh was Billy Kahn, who I will speak about shortly. But Teddy Yoros and Kahn fought on September 30th, 1937 at the Duquesne Garden, and the result was a split decision victory for Kahn. They would fight twice that same year and a third fight in 1938. In those two fights, Yoros won one and Kahn the other. Against other common opponents in Pittsburgh, Teddy Yoros split fights with Babe Risco, lost once and drew with Eddie Wolfe, beat Jackie King 3 times, as well as 3 victories over Jimmy Belmont. He would defeat Johnny Brown twice, and Larry Madge the same. A rivalry existed for Yoros with Tiger Joe Randall, who he had fought 4 times and won them all. Facing young Rudy, Teddy Yoros won all 4 of those fights. Yoros fought most of the venues mentioned before, 7 times along at Forbes Field. In his post-career life, he was the first athlete honored with a membership, what is known as the Polish Falcons, this given to him for life. This organization was founded in 1887, and presented to those of Polish heritage in an effort to promote their ancestry, physical fitness, and community support. Yoros lived out his life in the town of Monica, where he passed away in 1974 at the age of 63. Here is the broadcast of the final moments of the fight where Yoros and Vince Dundee also called by the famous boxing announcer Don Dumphy.
It's been a long, hard fight. Dundee literally leaping at Teddy Yarrow. And that's it. It's all over. As for the decision, referee Graybar and Judge Macbeth voted for Yarrow's. Judge Hoke cast his ballot for Dundee. As Judge Graybar, the referee, totaling up his scorecard, as the fighters wait, Teddy Yarrow's in the far corner to our right. Vince Dundee, the defending champion. And the announcement is that Yarrow's wins the title on a split 15-round decision. Teddy Yarrow's the winner and new middleweight champion of the world.
Our next fighter became known as the Croat Comet, and he was an amazing boxer, Fritzi Zivic, and was born to a father who was Croatian and his mother Slovenian. With five sons, the Zivic boys all boxed, but Fritzi was by far the most successful in the fight game. Fighting out of the Lawrenceville section of Pittsburgh, Fritzi Zivic's career as a pro began in 1931. He would capture the world welterweight championship over the course of his career, but also fought in the lightweight division. His record was not as shiny as some of the other boxers mentioned in this podcast, but Zivic fought professionally an incredible 233 times. While he lost 65 of those bouts, he won 157. Fighting in Pittsburgh, he had a record of 58-15 with one draw. Fighting other Pittsburgh-born boxers, Zivic defeated Charlie Burley, but lost to Billy Kahn. He did defeat the previously mentioned Sammy Angott, but in perhaps his biggest fight, he defeated Henry Hammer and Hank Armstrong in 1940, in which he won the welterweight title. He was a 4-1 underdog in that fight. Zivic also fought the great Sugar Ray Robinson, but lost that bout. For those who have seen the movie Raging Bull, the life story of Jake LaMotta, Fritzi Zivic owns a victory over him. And in his career that ran until 1949, Fritzi Zivic fought seven Hall of Fame fighters and nine boxers who at one time held a world title. He ducked no one. Zivic is famously quoted as saying about his sport, "You're boxing, you're not playing the piano." At the age of 84, Fritzi Zivic had been battling Alzheimer's disease, and that cost him his life as he passed away on May 16, 1984. Weird that his age actually matched the year of his death. Zivic died in the town where he came from and is buried in St. Nicholas Cemetery. In 1993, he was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Just 2 years ago, he was added to the Croatian American Sports Hall of Fame. Zivic had two sons and a daughter, as well as four grandchildren. We've reached the point to go discuss perhaps the greatest boxer in Pittsburgh's fight history, Billy Kahn, the Pittsburgh Kid. While Kahn's boxing record pales in compared to others, he fought only 76 times, but he won 64 of those fights. One of his losses is historic, as he took on heavyweight champion, one of the greatest fighters ever, Joe Louis. Kahn took the legendary fighter into round 13 after having won most of the first 12 rounds, but in the 13th, he made a terrible strategic mistake and thought he could knock out the champion. That backfired when Louis hit him with a terrific counterpunch, knocking out the Pittsburgh Kid. Up to that point, most scorecards had Kahn ahead, 7-5 on some, 7-4 on others, and an even fight by some. The first fight took place on October 1st, 1959, and 3 years later came a rematch with a completely different outcome as Louis knocked out the challenger again, this time in the 8th round. Billy Kahn's fighting career lasted from 1934 to 1948, but when fighting in Pittsburgh, he had 51 fights, winning all but 7, one of which was a draw. Kahn lost to Ralph Gizzi in 1935 by decision, to Sol Krager in 1937. He had several fights with Teddy Yarrow's, losing in 1937. A loss came to Teddy Movan in 1935, and yet another loss that same year at the hands of Ray Everly. On a personal side, Kahn married another Pittsburgher, Mary Louise Smith, on July 1, 1941. Smith's father was a professional baseball player named Jimmy Smith, who had a nickname Greenfield Jimmy. Apparently, he did not care for Billy Kahn, and the two got into a fistfight just before Kahn's rematch with Joe Louis. Kahn landed a punch to the head of Jimmy Smith, which broke the fighter's hand, postponing the Louis rematch. Just a few years before he passed away in 1993, Kahn was trying to be a good Samaritan by interrupting a robbery in progress at a convenience store in Pittsburgh and took a swing at the would-be robber, missing and landing on the floor instead. Said Kahn about the incident, "You always go with your best punt straight left. I think he interrupted his plans." In fact, Kahn was able to strip the coat off the man, which had in it the suspect's name and address, which led to his arrest. Kahn's wife was with him at the time and also tried to intervene. Her reaction to Billy Kahn was this: "My instinct was to get help. Billy's instinct was to fight." Up until he passed away, he became a close friend of Pittsburgh Steelers owner Art Rooney Sr., and he took part in several HBO documentaries as well as, of course, attending boxing matches and activities. He became a member of the International Boxing Hall of Fame, and his longtime wife, Mary, passed away in 2017 at the age of 94. I found several clips on YouTube centered around Billy Kahn. First up is the call of the knockout of Kahn in their first fight in round 13, and then the post-fight comments from both Kahn and Lewis.
Well, best round this has been for Joe Lewis for quite some time. And getting through now with impunity here against Billy Kahn, and he's gone over. Billy Kahn on the floor in round 13.
Knocked out in the big fight, Billy Kahn was asked afterwards about the rumors that he was going to quit the game.
I made up my mind last night after that terrible fight that it's time to quit.
Joe Lewis, still world heavyweight champion at the age of 32, spoke with considerable zest about his future fighting career.
Well, last night I felt good as ever, and I just as sharp, so I don't know. I felt last night, I haven't fought for a long time yet.
Then, as mentioned earlier, that incident in the store where he punched the robber, Kahn's take on those short moments.
Yeah, I interrupted him. I mean, I fixed him. He won't be robbing his store for a couple of days, I think.
Was it a left or a right?
I think it was a left hook, you know. It's just, you have to hit him with your favorite punch. It's just one of those things that happen once in a while.
There are four fighters left to discuss, and we begin with previously mentioned Sammy Angott. With 24 pro fights in Pittsburgh, Angott, this lightweight boxer, was born outside the Bergen, Washington, Pennsylvania, and close to California, Pennsylvania. He had multiple nicknames that included the Clutch, the Louisville Slugger, the Washington, and Windmill. His birth name was Salvatore Angotti. His overall record was not great, but in 131 fights, he won 94 and lost 29 with 8 draws. For almost a year, Angott was the world lightweight champion, holding the belt from December 19, 1941 until the following November. Like some of the previously mentioned boxers, Angott ducked no one. He climbed into the ring with the likes of Sugar Ray Robinson, Bo Jack, Fritzy Zivic, Henry Armstrong, and Ike Williams. In his 108th fight, he would face Robinson, one of the greatest fighters ever, at the Duquesne Gardens in Pittsburgh, but he lost a 10-round decision. The fight took place on Monday, March 4th, 1946. That was also Angott's final fight at home. His first fight in Pittsburgh came on July 22nd, 1935, when he lost a unanimous decision to Jackie Wilson in his sixth pro fight. In his retirement from the sports, Angott was employed at the Easton Corporation in Ohio, was forced to quit that job due to poor health in 1967. 13 years later, he passed away after battling a long illness. He was just 65 at the time. Hailing from Bessemer, Pennsylvania, in Lawrence County, not far from Pittsburgh, was Charlie Burley, a middleweight and welterweight fighter. Burley fought 98 times as a pro and won 83 of those bouts, 50 of them by knockout. Burley's career began in 1936 with his final fight in 1950. 50 fights were in Pittsburgh. Burley won 43 of those with one draw. Charlie Burley might be the best non-champion of this topic. Never getting a title shot, Burley defeated the likes of previously mentioned Fritzy Zivic and Archie Moore. Despite losing, he also fought the great Ezard Charles. One proudful thing for Charlie Burley is that in 98 fights, he was never knocked out. Not nearly as bad off as Joe Lewis became financially, Burley also struggled financially after boxing. He lived to be 75, passing away on October 16, 1992. The only title he held was what was called the World Colored Welterweight title, which he won on August 22, 1938, when he decisioned Herbert Lewis Hardwick, better known as the Coco Kid, at Hickey Park in Millvale. Burley's final bout in Pittsburgh came on March 2, 1950, when he defeated Buddy Hodnett, knocking him out in the sixth round at the Aragon Gardens. Charlie Burley passed away at the age of 75 on October 16, 1992. His early life is interesting, as he was born to a black coal miner and a mother who was an Irish immigrant from County York in Ireland. At the age of 7, he and his 6 siblings moved to Pittsburgh after their father was killed in an industrial accident in 1925. Burley started boxing at the age of 12, fighting out of the Boys Club in the city, and would go on to win a city, state, and national junior boxing title, as well as a Golden Glove senior title. But in 1936, he lost in the National Senior Championship in the final bout of the competition. That same year, he was invited to the Olympic trials for the United States, but refused because of the Nazi regime.
He asked me, who was the best fighter you ever saw? Would it be Charlie Burry? No, Charlie Burry was an exception.
They still talk about you out of Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah, when you was out there, they tell me you was out there knocking out heavyweights.
But the only thing, I'm so sorry they just wouldn't give me a chance. Mm-hmm. To mean at the title and things.
Yeah, from what I know, you're not bitter about that.
Not exactly. It was the way it was supposed to be.
We go back to the year 1910, and that is when Thaddeus Yoros was born on the north side of Pittsburgh. More commonly known was Teddy Yoros. This middleweight fighter, as a pro, would win the world middleweight title in 1934 and hold on to it through 1935. After 128 professional fights, Yoros won 106, losing 18 times and drawing in 3 others. He was knocked out just once in his career by Babe Risco in 1935, and when fighting in his home city, he would appear in several venues 58 times, losing 4 and finishing 1 fight in a draw. At the age of 10, his family, which included 6 siblings, aside from Teddy, moved to nearby Monica. Because of family finances, Yoros dropped out of high school at the age of 17 to pursue a pro boxing career. When he won the world middleweight title, he did it in Pittsburgh at Forbes Field, defeating Vince Dundee by a split decision. Those two fighters had met a year before, with Yoros winning that fight as well on points. The Risco fight was also at Forbes Field. On a personal side, Yoros married a Pittsburgher, Eugenia Lesniak, who was from Lawrenceville, and their marriage came in 1940. Once retired from boxing, he opened a bar in Potter Township called Teddy's Inn, and then he became a police officer. He was also a caster for the Aliquippa Works of the Jones & Laughlin Steel Corporation, and in the end, cancer got the best of Teddy Yoros, and he died on March 29, 1974, and he was only 63 years old. In 2006, he was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Yoros did fight some big-name fighters, including Billy Kahn, who he had lost a split decision to, and he met the Pittsburgh Kid several times, beating him in 1938 on a unanimous decision, but he had lost twice to Kahn in 1937, both fights rendering a decision in favor of Kahn. All those fights were in Pittsburgh, 2 at Forbes Field, the other at Duquesne Gardens. To end this podcast, I close with another fighter from Pittsburgh who began a pro boxing career in 1995, but also had a personal life that spun out of control. That would be Paul Spadafora. By the time he began his career, Billy Kahn was long gone, but Spadafora went by the same nickname, the Pittsburgh Kid. He had a successful boxing campaign, losing just 1 fight in 51 bouts. There was 1 draw, but that 1 loss came in his next-to-last fight to Johan Perez in 2013 in a fight held at the Mountaineer Casino in West Virginia. The WBA interim super lightweight title was at stake, and Spadafora had lost a majority decision. At the time of the Perez fight, Perez had lost just once. As for Spadafora, who grew up in the McKees Rocks area of Pittsburgh, he would fight in Pittsburgh and nearby Erie 23 times and never lose. His 1 draw was against Leonardo Dorofte at the Peterson Center while he held on to his IBF lightweight title and lost a chance at winning the WA version of the title. While Spadafora upped his record to 26-0, he challenged Israel Cardona for the IBF lightweight championship and won the vacant title by unanimous decision. He would finish his career without ever losing that title and defended it 8 times. In the Pittsburgh fights, he scored a TKO or KO 10 times in the 24 fights held in Pittsburgh. Of the venues he fought, they included the AJ Palumbo Center, the Avalon Hotel, the Chevrolet Amphitheater, Heinz Field, the Hilton Garden Inn in Cannonsburg, the Icy Light Amphitheater, and fights took place at the Lawrence Convention Center and in the Mellon Arena, inside Monzo's Palace in Monroeville, and at the Rivers Casino, Sheraton Station Square, and in venues located at Washington, Pennsylvania. But Spadafore's personal demons began early in his life. His father died from a drug overdose when Spadafore was just 9. As a teenager, he found himself homeless at one point. In the 9th grade, he dropped out of school to take on boxing. Spadafore has a history of alcoholism and drug use. In 2003, he took a gun to his then-girlfriend, Nadine Russo, shooting her in the chest and pleading guilty to the crime. In February 2005, he was sentenced to 6 months at a rehabilitation center. Spadafore made amends, strangely enough, to his former girlfriend, Russo, who would get engaged to and then have a child with. He did get prison time for the shooting, but twice in 2011, in September, and then a month later, he was arrested on DUI charges. In 2012, he was sued by his manager for breach of contract. The problems didn't stop there. After his retirement from boxing in 2014, 2016 became a nightmare year for Spadafore. In April, he was charged for an assault after an altercation with a woman in Crafton, Pennsylvania, outside a bar there. In December of that same year, he was arrested due to another altercation with his brother, whom he stabbed in the leg and then kicked his mother in the back. In March of 2018, he pleaded guilty to simple assault, resisting arrest, and terroristic threats. Because of the time served, he was released on parole. The latest word I could find on the fighter is that as of 2024, he is now living in Las Vegas, out of a gym in his garage and training boxers. The final insult to injury is that in October of 2024, Spadafore's dog bit him on the left arm, severing an artery, forcing the former fighter to pay a visit to the hospital. Woof and ouch. Paul Spadafore obviously led a life that he could have lived better and more successfully. I did find the following audio from Spadafore while he was driving and talking to an interviewer about his life now and his addictions, but he does drop some F-bombs in this interview, and in this short clip he uses several other curse words. Before that's played, here's the announcement of his victory, winning the NABF title bout on April 6, 2013, defeating Rob Frankel by decision.
Boxing fans, after 10 non-stop rounds of action, how about a round of applause for these two warriors? And after those 10 rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards. Judge Vince Guerra scores the bout 97-93. Judge James Teal scores about 98-92, while Rex Ackley scores it 99-91. All three judges for your winner. And the new Super Lightweight Champion of the World.
I mean, I knew him from the start. I went to camp. I prepared for this. And he brought the best of me, and he's a hell of a fighter.
All right. Now, what was your...
That's what happened. It's how do you wake up in a good mood like the way I wake up today? You know, I did everything right yesterday. It's the bottom line. You got to do the right thing yesterday. Like today, I got to do the right thing. Tomorrow, I'll wake up. I feel like no one can. I'm like that. I feel like that. You know what I mean? I would never lie to you about that. I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm a person that really don't give a fuck. I love life. I love God. I'll do anything for anybody. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I bet with that type of spirit, I'm willing to do what I have to do to get what I need. You know what I mean? That's just how I feel. And I think God, and that's the thing though, is see, sometimes because I'm a greedy motherfucker and I have an addiction, an alcohol addiction, that's where everything fucks up. The control, you can't ever, and they always say, I go to them rooms and they say, you can't pick the first one up.
That makes this podcast a wrap, talking about boxers who were born in Pittsburgh or nearby. All have intriguing stories. All were champions. Who was the best of the bunch as an all-around boxer? That's hard to say, but in my opinion, that would either be Harry Greb or Fritzy Zivic. Look them up on the internet and just take a gander at their photos. They simply have that tough guy look. Those two men look like a couple of characters you would not want to bump into a dark alley. Tough and gritty and ready to kick your ass. So what is the next for the Total Sports Recall on this podcast? Around April 15th, I'll be talking about the wrestling family, the Von Erichs, and how tragic and sad their story is. If you have not seen the movie The Iron Claw, starring Zac Efron, you must see it. It's not so much about the sport of pro wrestling, but also very much about personal demons and situations this family faced. Future podcast topics will include a review of some of the great voices of Pittsburgh sports radio and a follow-up podcast that will discuss some of the greatest sports speeches in history. I've also planned a podcast on three extinct football leagues. So I hope this podcast was a history lesson of sorts for those listening, especially for anyone calling Pittsburgh home. It's always my hope that you enjoy the topics covered here. And as always, I welcome comments and suggestions to the podcast email address, which is totalsportsrecall@gmail.com. I would love to hear from all of you, and I want to extend thanks once again to the Sports History Network for hosting this podcast. Until my next episode, this is Harv Aronson bidding you adieu and welcome you back again in a few weeks. Everyone stay safe, happy, and healthy.
The contents of this podcast do not represent the opinions of others and are solely the opinions of Harv Aronson based on his experience, knowledge, and research.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.